in, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 564. I am here with my lovely, talented, and effervescent co-host, Miss Nicole Shiro.
Hello, Lisa.
You are listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby, streaming live as we always do during the coronavirus on KOOP.org. Do not go away.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up. Feast your eyes on the wonders of this world.
It is Wednesday, May 13th, 2020, day 634 of the COVID-19 lock-in. On the show today, we have Megan Wells of the City of Austin Cultural Arts Division. And then later on in the show, we're going to be talking to Adam Roberts and Ginger Morris about Gatsmata, better known as the Greater Austin High School Musical Theater Awards. Stick with us after this song. All right, Nicole Shiro, welcome to
Lisa Shepps.
It's us.
It's us. Do you feel like you're living in Groundhog Day yet?
I didn't understand a word you just said.
Do you feel like you're living in Groundhog Day yet?
Oh, my God, Nicole Shiro, I have no idea what day I'm living in. So this is truly the strangest few months of my life, and don't see any – I don't see a light at the end of the tunnel at this point.
No, it's like the – yeah, no, no. I'm like, I'd like to say I feel like it's ending, but I don't feel like I know anything going on.
No. So let me tell you something. Did you recognize that that song we were playing? Usher, it's Usher, like, Usher,
yeah,
Usher.
I did, but I didn't. So what is it?
Well, I'm going to give you a hint. It's from the 2020 or 2019, I don't know actually which year it is, Pulitzer Prize for Drama, which is a musical this year, only the 10th time in its existence.
What is it?
Strange Loop won the Pulitzer Prize in Drama. It's the 10th musical to do this. It goes into the ranks of Next to Normal, A Chorus Line.
I knew Chorus Line was one. Because it's a singular sensation.
there's 10. Actually, I'm gonna Wikipedia right now so that we can actually give you the 10, because it's actually really very
interesting. It sounds like a very fascinating list, to be honest with you.
It is, especially since it's so rare. That's happened to of course, Hamilton. Don't know why we didn't think of that.
I figured it was just like that was the known one. Why even bother?
Yeah. So the musicals are Of the Icing, South Pacific, Fiorello, How to Succeed. I did not know that.
I didn't know how to succeed, really.
Yeah,
I think I knew South Pacific now that you said that.
Yeah,
but keep going. These are interesting. Fiorello, he always comes up.
A Chorus Line. Sunday in the Park, which baffles me. Rent, then I already mentioned Next Normal, Hamilton, and now A Strange Loop.
I didn't realize Rent did. That's pretty awesome.
Well,
that's
Rent changed theater. So,
well, I know Rent changed theater. Oh, I lived it. I was a part of it. I saw all the I was immersed in it. I guess I just forgot that.
Yep. So A Strange Loop was written by Michael Jackson. No relation. Michael R. Jackson, and it is, I will read the Wikipedia summary because it's actually kind of interesting. It was a sleepy.
He's not the man in the mirror.
Pardon me?
He's not the man in
He's
the
not
mirror.
Not the man in the mirror. No. So this is it's a meta musical. It's a musical about Usher, and he's named because his day job, he's an usher for the Lion King on Broadway. He's an overweight gay black writer, as he tries to navigate the heteronormative white world. He remarks that he thinks he'll never be as successful as the singer who shares his name, something he has in common with the writer of this musical. He's backed by a 6-person all-black ensemble who voices inner thoughts as he begrudgingly ghostwrites a new Tyler Perry movie.
Okay, there's just so much about that I love on so many levels.
And I would suggest that you go and look at some of the YouTubes because it looks like a lot of fun.
Oh, okay. I will take your suggestion and I will go with it.
Yeah. And the Lucille Lortel Awards, which were just given, it was nominated for everything. It won Lead Actor in a Musical for Larry Owens, who plays Usher, and a Lead Feature Actor in a Musical, John Andrew Morrison. We had a relatively large passing, at least a large passing in my life. Zev Buffman passed away, and he was a producer. He did some Broadway, but he did a lot of stuff with Elizabeth Taylor. We talked about him not too long ago. He did this Muhammad Ali play years ago.
I was about to say, I feel like we talked about him.
We did talk about him. He was prominent in my life because he was the producer of not only Oh Brother that I did on Broadway, but also in the Sweet By and By, which I did on his theater circuit, which I did a whole bunch of shows on his theater circuit down in Florida. He owned theaters. He owned the Parker Playhouse, the Gussman in Miami. He owned one in West Palm Beach. He owned a whole bunch of theaters in Florida. Anyway, but he passed away just a couple days ago.
So that's sad.
Sad.
How old?
I'm going to say he was in his 80s or 90s.
I was like, wasn't he late 80s?
I'm going to say yes. It's not in the first paragraph of the obit, so I'm just going to say yes. 89.
Good life.
89. Yes, he did well. And he was from Israel, I believe. He's Israeli.
No.
You sent me a link that I just really loved called Swans for Relief, Misty Copeland.
Oh, Misty Copeland. This I rewound and watched 6 times and I'm like, I didn't know if I should send it to you. I'm like, I'm sending this to Lisa.
No, it's amazing. And she amassed a whole bunch of ballerinas around the world and they all danced to the Black Swan from
Swan Lake.
Thank you, Swan Lake. Did you see, and I did not write this down, but did you see there's a male version of the same thing to a hip hop piece of music? And I didn't write it in. I wish I had. Did you see it?
I did see that.
Amazing.
Oh, I did. I saw it trending. Oh my goodness.
And they passed shoes around. So there was a prop that went from screen to screen, which I thought was interesting.
Oh shoot. Why can't I think of this?
Don't worry about it. Let's just talk about it. So you saw it.
I did. I saw it. Yes, I did. It was on, I saw it. I was, went on Twitter, went on somewhere and I saw it trending. I'm like, what is this? It was one of those things I was curious. So I clicked on it.
Yeah. So the last thing that I want to talk about before we introduce our first guest is what did I want to talk about? Oh, I read this article today. It was, or I think it was in the briefing yesterday, but talking about the effect that the falling of the cruise line is going to have on Broadway and Broadway shows. And I didn't realize, I mean, I worked in the cruise industry for a while and we did some Broadway shows, but it was mostly original shows. But cruise lines like NCL, Norwegian Cruise Lines, has been booking, I think starting in like the 80s, they had Hello Dolly as a long running piece. So this was money that was coming into those artists for years. So it's not like a regional theater that'll do it for a month. This would be running for a year or so. So that's all closed down right now.
Yeah.
And for the foreseeable future.
Yes. And interestingly enough, like Bob Mackie would do all the costume designs for all the shows for Holland America.
Yeah.
So it's like there are all these different ties that go in there. I read that article too, and I was like, oh, I mean, I guess this, duh, Nicole. I had a, yeah, you're right. This is really going to affect, like, it was one of those mind-blown moments.
It's going to affect a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I know. Did you see that article I sent you, though, about how I found it so amazing in Argentina, that online art, that people can't get enough, and that the viewership for theater, dance, music is through the roof?
Yeah, but I
find it interesting that Argentina takes it in. I'm like, well, what are they doing that we're not doing? What is it in their culture that is more accepting that's not in ours? Like, what is it?
Well, I'm going to argue that, and I believe this. I think all these online offerings and things like this, and Ground Floor Theater is doing them too. They are theater adjacent. They are not theater. Theater requires an audience together in a room with
the
performers.
Absolutely.
So,
people were yearning for it.
We're yearning for it here too. I mean,
I'd love to see someone do a study like showing how much watching the arts is up in America opposed, you know, like someone did for Argentina. I would like to know. Who could write that? Call Jesse Green.
I would guess that Argentina will win. I don't think Americans, they're missing their football more than they're missing their Broadway.
Well, so is Argentina's missing their football more than that. I mean, soccer is the, I don't know if you've been on a bus with a bunch of soccer people in Argentina, but the bus shakes up now and it moves, yeah. And it's a little scary.
I haven't, and I won't. So with that said, let's take a little tiny break to listen to some music, and I will bring this to you, Nicole Shiro, of those 10 musicals. What do you want to hear some music from right now?
I'd like to hear some Rent.
All right. Well, here's a little bit of Rent to go away before we come back on our next section.
I should tell you I'm disaster. I forget how to begin it.
Let's just make this part go faster. I have yet to be in it. I should tell you. I blew the candle out. Just
love me some Rent.
I do love me some Rent. That musical really still sings to me, speaks to me, man.
It does. So yeah. I was able to sit down. So last week we talked to a lot of people about the city and things that are going on at the city and the Cultural Arts Division. But I sat down with Megan Wells, who is the manager of the Cultural Arts Division. I know that's not her actual title, but I say it in the interview, so it'll be there. But she basically heads it up. And this was right after a big announcement was made to the theater community by the Cultural Arts Division, confirming that this next interim year, we are looking at a 45% to 75% reduction in the monies we got from last year, which was already a reduction.
Already a reduction.
From previous years. So it's looking a little bleak, but it was a nice interview. Would you like to hear it?
I would love to hear it. Let me buckle up.
Okay, here it is. I have Megan Wells here on the phone. Megan is the Cultural Arts Division Manager over at the City of Austin. We've been doing a lot of work with Megan over the years, and this is the first time that she's on the show. Megan Wells, welcome to Offstage and On the Air.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Interestingly enough, we are recording this on Wednesday at 1 p.m., which is when the show airs, but we are recording this for next week. So right now, as we speak, the show is going on, in which your one of your partners, your coworkers, Jesus Pantel, is being interviewed. So the audience Excellent. Is listening to that right now, and they'll get this a little bit more contemporaneous information next week.
Love it.
So let's just talk. I'm going to just start right away with the email that many of the cultural contractors received. I believe it was today, or it may have been yesterday. It was yesterday, about the 2020-2021 contracts, which is the interim year. As we read it, we are expecting to, the contractors are only allowed to apply for what they received in the current year, and they should expect to receive between 45 and 75% reduction in that. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's kind of what we know right now. You know, things are changing all the time. So what we're operating on is an estimate of, you know, anticipated hot tax that we're going to be getting for use next year. And as everyone probably knows, it's all when we contract out to our cultural funding contractors, it's an estimate of what we're going to be receiving in the next year. So as those monies come in, that's what we use basically to make those contracts whole. And so when we look to the estimate for the next fiscal year, we use what the Convention Center kind of gives us as, you know, best practice for how to forecast that anticipated revenue. And what we've gotten so far from them is, you know, this amount of about $9 million coming in FY21. Now, we've gotten that amount, and, you know, nobody has really a crystal ball, but that is based on some assumptions that we just don't know will hold true as people, you know, kind of start to travel again and start to take part in activities where there's public assembly happening.
Right.
So there's a lot of kind of economic assumptions based on, you know, built into that amount. And, you know, the 40 to 75% of that is kind of where we're trying to hedge our bets. Because we just don't know how much of that is actually going to happen, depending on when people feel comfortable going out, when it's, you know, kind of more, you know, publicly safe to do so. We know that, you know, without any kind of assurance that there's herd, you know, immunity out there, it's going to be hard for people to feel safe. So it's just a matter of us trying to kind of put something into the world that we can work with that's a feasible number. So that's where we're starting from. And if things change, if we get more information as things go along, we will use that. But right now, in order to meet the city's budget deadline, which is, you know, they pass the budget every year in the early fall. This year, they actually have a month earlier because of timing. With other factors going on with the city, we have to get them a budget number for what we think we will use with hot funds by July, which means we have to get the Arts Commission's kind of blessing on the funding by June, which, you know, back that up further. And we have to, you know, have something in place where we've got applications for this bridge year, you know, going on now. So that's kind of why we put that out there with our best estimate of where we think those funds are going to land. And, you know, we're kind of just trying to use what we know, knowing that we're in this place where we don't really know. But we know we're going to get something. It's just we're not sure how much.
Right. Well, and of course, we've all been speculating because the hot funds, which is the hotel occupancy tax, clearly, with the onset of COVID-19, hotel occupancy has gone down to practically nothing, I'm guessing.
Yeah, so I think our last estimate revenue was 5% or something. So
yeah, so it's not a huge surprise, and yet it still is a surprise when we see it there written in black and white. So let me ask you a question. I don't know, within the city, and this is something I did not ask any of my guests from last week. I'm just curious, as we in the theater community, and especially those of us that run venues, have been talking to each other about how we think we're going to come out of this, how and when. Have you in the city, from an official standpoint, have y'all been discussing what that's going to look like from a governmental standpoint or regulatory standpoint with what you're going to allow places of assembly to do and on what timetable?
That's a great question. I think we're grappling with that both from kind of the state perspective and the city perspective.
Well, the state is like anything goes. They're ready to open up right now.
Yeah, that's why it's a little bit tricky because I don't think it's any, you know, big secret that the city government has been taking a more cautious approach to advising businesses on when they should be opening up or could open up. But there's always this sort of balance between what the governor is saying and what the city is saying. And so we've been trying to do our best to kind of align with what the guidance is coming out from the state. But knowing that, you know, from the city perspective, we are very much interested in protecting, you know, public safety as best we can. And that means taking maybe a more slow and measured approach to the guidance that we're giving businesses in terms of how they interact with the public. So that it's there's not a great answer on this just yet, because we're still struggling with what it looks like to be in compliance.
Are you being consulted by the city management or the mayors or the council people? Is Cultural Arts Division and the Economic Department, are you part of the consultation and the discussions on the where and when?
To some extent, I'll say that the Economic Development Department is the lead department that's kind of playing a highly, you know, connected role with the economic recovery citywide, and I would say regionally, because our director is leading that task force. And so as far as regulatory, since there really hasn't been a lot of kind of penalties, it's more kind of like the price you pay is more people will get sick and die, not so much a criminal offense. I mean, that, you know, it seems like, you know, people would be taking it more seriously with public health at risk like that. But there hasn't been a whole lot of like, these are the hard and fast rules that everyone must abide by, or they're going to be slapped with a fine or slapped with, you know, some sort of like, you know, restricted access, you know, permit violation. I don't think that's the kind of code compliance that the city's taking, you know, that approach right now. It may become that way if we see, you know, huge spikes, you know, beyond what we've seen so far. But right now it's more kind of like, let's be aware of how this is affecting everybody's health and safety and take it seriously from that point, not so much the city taking a kind of a stick approach. But as far as policy goes, economic development is very much, you know, looped into those conversations directly with council and with mayor and with city management, so that there are, you know, best practices that pertain to our local community, first and foremost. So we are connected in those.
Well, good. And I know that the theater community anyway is right there. We, the venue operators, get together weekly and we talk, and we're all erring on the side of caution.
Yeah.
Nobody really expects to get going anytime soon. Even when we do open, we are suspect about who will actually come.
Yeah, and I think that's such a fantastic way to bring, you know, unity, is to take a coalition approach so that everybody has kind of the same information, the same stance, because everybody knows you're just more powerful as a group with one voice. So, and that's how we kind of would love to see the arts, you know, generally being viewed as, you know, this is a critical component of a complete community and a thriving economy. So we have to have this, you know, this be a critical aspect of whenever policy is formulated or revised. So absolutely. Well,
of course we agree with that, because culture and art is so vitally important, especially in Austin, which uses it as a marketing tool to get people to come here.
You know, I just think, you know, nationally and especially locally, people are relying on culture, arts and culture, to keep them sane and connected and inspired and humanized. And that's the way it's always been when the chips are down. But it's the very first and foremost thing to suffer economically when that happens too. So, yeah, it's hard.
Let me just finish with this one last question. Within the city of Austin, within the Cultural Arts Division, that covers a pretty wide group of people: musicians, visual artists, theater artists, dancers. Within our little subgroups, some groups have more of a voice than the other. And I will go on the assumption that the musicians have the loudest voice. And we've been seeing a lot of them in the media lately saying, "Help us survive this." What do you say to theater artists and dance artists, who were the people that we sort of talked to on this show, to help get our voice heard equally as loud or somewhat as loud?
I think that's it's sort of an interesting dichotomy between like the people who think that that musicians have like this extra cachet or extra sort of elite status or prioritization in the city, just because, you know, Austin sometimes has that moniker of the live music capital of the world, or, you know, there's just so many, like, you know, people looking to musicians when they say, oh, what is the culture in Austin? And it is, we all know it's a very diverse ecosystem, and musicians definitely play a part, but we have such a thriving theater community and dance. I mean, the culture here is so much more diverse than just one genre. But I would say, you know, always stay in touch with your council members and always stay in touch with any kind of public outlet where they're looking for voices to be amplified. So, you know, create, you know, streams where you can promote yourselves, work with local media, you know, and also that I think that coalition that you've started to just, you know, bring everyone together to have a single voice is incredibly important. Always, of course, know that, you know, perception is sort of one thing and the reality is another. It's funny because when people are like, oh, musicians get everything. It's funny when you, sometimes when I talk to folks in the live music community, they're like, oh man, all the other artists and cultural arts get all the stuff and we don't. And so it's like, it's sort of this funny, like, oh, the grass is always greener. You know, cause they've always felt like, you know, some of the funding in the city should go more towards individual musicians where it typically has not been deemed an appropriate use or an eligible use. And so now with the sort of live music fund coming on board, it's giving them that platform that we've had for other genres, but it, I don't know that it necessarily means that they are sort of getting heightened priority. I want, you know, this, the only way that culture really thrives is if everyone is, you know, getting a seat at the table. We just have to make the table bigger. And so we're trying to do that. I think it's important to know that the contributions that the theater community makes is absolutely one of the most indelible marks that Austin has to rely on when you look at the identity that we have. Fringe theater especially, you know, has really made a mark here. Those small theaters, those individual theater producers that are making work that is, you know, amazingly meaningful and relevant today, absolutely should be up there with all of the music we produce as well. So if there's anything that I can do to help amplify your voices, happy to do so as well. But I think right now there's a lot of noise out there and it's hard to, you know, make your way through the din. But we're all kind of trying to do that.
Well, great. Well, these are truly interesting times we're living in. And I'm hoping, and I think we all will get through them, and maybe we'll be even better when we come out at the other end. Megan Wells, thank you so much for joining us on Offstage and on the Air, and I hope this is not your last appearance.
I would love to come back anytime. Thank you for having me.
Great. Thank you, Megan. Okay, we're going to have to take a little break right now. We will be right back. We are back. You're listening to Offstage and on the Air with Lisa Sheps and
Nicole Shugo.
just for giggles, Nicole Shugo, pick a number between 2 and 53.
Oh, I am going to pick 25.
25. Have no idea what it is, but it just played.
Hi, I'm Joey Elrose with Memphis the Musical, and I play Huey Calhoun, and you are listening to Offstage and on the Air on KOOP Hornsby, Austin. 91.7 Hockadoo.
No, I love 25.
25 is good. So let's just talk about what's going on locally. We have a pretty long interview coming up, so we just have a few minutes to discuss. But I'm looking at the Now Playing Austin, and one of the things that have you been watching any of the improved Shakespeare stuff on Zoom?
I have not. Their post just popped up in my feed the other day when I was on there, and I was like, oh, wait, I got to go and check them out. I have not seen anything, but I do adore them to pieces.
Me too. Well, they're doing As You Like It. And I saw a little bit of it yesterday or the day before. And it looked like it's just a lot of fun. And they did some good work putting it together.
I love it.
Yep.
Well, I'm going to go online and check it out later. So.
Yeah. And I believe it's improvedshakespeare.org maybe.
I think just their handle on like Twitter is where I last saw them. And on the Facebook, I think it's just improved Shakespeare.
So check that out.
Might be an underscore, but they're easy to do the Google.
They do some really fun work. And of course, theaters like Trinity Street Theater they do some musical series. Hyde Park has been replaying. I believe they're going to be doing House again soon. And the Vortex is constantly doing online stuff, lots of different things. So lots of stuff. You what?
Yeah, I saw the Vortex says, I was jamming out to Alan Robertson's Tortoise and Hare again this week. I just can't get enough of that Alan Robertson.
Is it online?
It is. I'll send you a link for it. Oh my gosh.
One would guess you could probably go to zacktheater.org and get information about it.
Yeah, I think it's Zack Now, I think, is the / for all their online offerings right now. But I know you can get it off. They posted it off of Twitter because it reminded me again, and I started watching it, and just love Alan Robertson.
Well, one of the things that was supposed to have happened last month was the Greater Austin High School Musical Theater Awards. They have a big ceremony at the Long Center, and it's a big gala, and it's a lot of fun, and it's a pretty big deal. That obviously didn't happen, but they do have an online offering, which is going to be coming up at the end of this month. And you and I
talked... Which sounds to me like a pretty big deal.
It does.
To be honest with you, I was like, whoa.
Yep. It's they're putting a lot of work into it on a video. So but rather than us talk about it, why don't we listen to Ginger Morris and Adam Roberts discuss it?
Yes.
That sound like a good idea?
Let's.
Okay, here it is. Nicole and I are here, and I'm thrilled to say this. Two of my favorite people of all time.
Mine too.
And Nicole's too. Ginger Morris of the Long Center and Adam Roberts of absolutely everything. And they are here to talk to us about the Greater Austin High School Musical Theater Awards. Ginger and Adam, welcome to Offstage and On the Air.
Thanks for having us. Also, for the record, I also adore Lisa, Nicole, and Adam, so I am delighted to be here and love all of you too.
Ditto.
I like these adoration parties. We can have these all the time.
Yeah.
I was going to say mutual admiration society.
Me too. So Ginger, let us know. I think we'll just assume that our audience knows what the Greater Austin High School Musical Theater Awards are, because we talk about them a lot. They were scheduled to have their big ceremony last week,
Wednesday, April 15th. So I
at the Long Center.
Middle of April at the Long Center. Yes.
Clearly, it's not. And so I'm excited to tell people what you guys are doing.
Yeah. So we sort of got together and said, "What can we do in this time?" To celebrate the schools and the students and the work that has been done. There were 33 schools participated. Obviously we were going to have to do something virtual. So we could have just announced some award recipients, but that's not really what the program is about. It has always been about building community and finding a voice for our young artists and supporting the work that they did, and not just celebrating some winners. So we got a big group of amazing Austin artists together and said, what can we create? And we all got very ambitious and very excited about what we could create. So the opening number that normally happens live is a truncated version of it is happening for this virtual awards show. It's May 31st, by the way. It's May 31st at 7:30, so everybody can tune in and see it.
Opening number truncated in time, but not in content.
Yeah, I want to talk about the opening number, because the opening number is typically a production number.
Yes.
And those of us in the biz know the production number is big and brassy and involves a lot of dancers, lots of singing. Are you keeping the dance part of the production number going in the Zoom? I'm assuming it's Zoom. We tend to do everything on Zoom, but online?
So I'll explain a little bit about the process. We basically, Adam and Alan Robertson and Sarah Burke, and our friend Dustin Gooch and I sort of all threw out some ideas, and we put together a shot list that is very extensive. And we got on a Zoom meeting with the Select Ensemble students, and we walked through everything that they were going to record at home and send in video content that we are editing. And so so they first had to send in all of the audio, and Alan is creating took all of their audio and turned it into the audio that we're using. And then
I'm assuming that Alan created a scratch track for them to record too.
Yes, that's right.
That they listened to at home. And I'm assuming there was some coaching or something that Adam did with them as well.
That also happened. That's true. So then we got on a Zoom call. Adam can talk about a Zoom call with 33 singing students.
It's like
that was actually the name of my third book.
Yeah. 33 singing students. I think that's when the 12 Days of Christmas goes way too long. So Alan created back when we started the awards back in 2013, when Ginger started the awards, really, I was just part of it. Back when the awards started in 2013, Alan had created a MIDI track. So like an orchestral backing track for the opening and the closing that he had written originally for that production, so that we would have something to know how to choreograph to, and so the kids would know how it sounded and all that sort of stuff, because that was a way that we would know what the sonic world would be like once we had an orchestra. So that track already existed. And so then after the decisions were made as to what lyrics might change and what could potentially be cut out and things of that opening, then Alan took that, put it together, and then that was sent out to all of the students in the select ensemble. At that point, we had a rehearsal all together, as Ginger mentioned. Now, it's worth mentioning that we had been rehearsing with the select ensemble because they start rehearsals in like October of every year.
Okay.
So already they had been together in person up through probably the end of February.
March, end of February. Yeah.
Yeah. So
I was wondering if they had any time together. So they did. Interesting.
They yes. did. They knew each other. They did, some fundraisers and things throughout the fall and throughout the beginning of the year. And so we had been together and rehearsing. And in fact, we'd even gotten so far as to sort of get a concept, because, you know, every year the concept for the beginning of the opening changes.
Sure.
So we had already talked about a concept and heard some kids sing and thought about some arranging before then the shelter in place order was given. So we kind of ran with some of that concept that we'd already heard, you know, certain students sing together, and we knew that that would blend well and everything. And so when we got on this Zoom call, when we were going to rehearse this opening, this new opening with everybody, I think one of the really amazing and cool things about it is that, you know, as most people who have ever tried to do any kind of music over any video conferencing platform probably know, there's a lag, right? So I can't be playing on one end and have people singing. There are already, you know, internet MIDI is a thing, and there are some solutions that have been out there and that are getting tweaked for our current times. But in any case, you know, I can play the parts, the different harmony parts on my end so that they can sort of rehearse it. So what we did was we had everybody mute their microphones on Zoom, all, you know, 30, however many of them there are, 33, we said, right? Mute their microphones on Zoom. And then I would say, here is, you know, the alto part, or here is the middle part of those three at this measure. I'd play it through a few times, ask them to sort of sing it to themselves with their microphones on mute. And then, and this is kind of, this is really scary and vulnerable and something to be really proud of these students for, you know, since only one person can sing at a time in this kind of a situation, and because they didn't have me playing along with them in real time, you know, we would ask different individuals to unmute and sing back to us a cappella, and all of their peers are there. So it's really something. And I think acapella, it really is. It was incredible that they did it. I mean, acapella singing is such a great thing to do anyway, but
well, that is very courageous of them, because not only are, it would be courageous even if it was just you and the one student, but it is 32 of their peers listening on. And that's frightening and brave. Good for them.
Yeah, it was really incredible. I'm so proud of them. And so at the end of that call, all of them had recorded on their phones, just like you would in a regular rehearsal. All of them had recorded all of the different parts, the possible parts on their phones. And then we gave them a deadline and asked them to then put in their earbuds or put on their headphones, listen to Alan's track, and record those different pieces. And some of them sent in, you know, they were like, I can sing every one of the harmony parts. I'll just send you four tracks. And some of them sent one, you know. So then Alan took all of those from the Dropbox folder that we had, that everybody was sort of depositing these things in, took them together and edited them together, laid them back on top of that track that everybody was singing to. And then that will, you know, be laid under the edited video per the shot list. So it's very, very extensive, but very cool.
And it really, I mean, it's the shot list is very, very long. And yes, there is some dancing. There's a lot of, like, you know, on this count, walk to something that looks like this in your house. Do, you know, this is the red carpet section. Lay something red down somewhere in your home and so walk down.
Did the
so
did
are you
the
calling four... Saturday Night Live and letting them know that you'll take over this Saturday because you have the whole show?
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, let's see how this all comes together.
Did the four of you storyboard this, or was there one person that sort of took charge in storyboarding the video?
I would say, so for this number, we have four different people editing different portions of the show. Mm-hmm. So Dustin Gooch is the person who's doing this opening. So Dustin, Alan, and Sarah and I sort of had different conversations and threw some ideas back and forth. And then I sort of put together kind of a basic structure of what we were going to do. And then Sarah and I really talked through every single moment to figure out what the students needed. Sure. And she put together a shot list literally that has like a little section for each shot that says how to hold the camera, how far away, what angle, literally every single thing. Will you be singing in this section or not? And then specifically what you're doing. And then Sarah actually made teach through videos for each shot.
Oh my.
So the students would watch the video to know exactly what to do. I mean, it's been very intense.
So the awards ceremony that's going to happen on the 30th obviously is going to have these videos, which are highly technical, very detailed, but pre-produced. Is there also a live element that's going to be happening?
There will not be a live element, but there are lots of other elements. So that I'm happy to talk about.
Please
so,
do.
I just want to say real quick, I'm interrupting, but I think this is interesting. Dustin Gooch in New York, who's, as Ginger mentioned, is editing the opening, texted me the other day once all of the kids' files were in and said, do you know how many files this is for this opening number? 550 files.
Sure.
That's actually after Sarah and Ronan and I went through and picked.
You did pick. Like, that's oh my God. Well, that's after select.
So yeah. That's a curated list.
The curated
550 files.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and that's just the opening. That's the first 4 minutes of this. We're hoping hour and a half, a virtual award show.
Yep.
We promise it's going to be shorter than the live show.
Well, you have a little bit more control.
We have a lot more control, yeah. So we have reached out to a lot of Broadway people to ask them to do the nomination and award announcements and have and some shout outs and have had just so much gracious love from the Broadway community.
Sure.
Not only we reached out to Rachel Chavkin and Rachel Hawk, who did scenic and direction for Hadestown and both won the Tonys. And
Indecent as well.
Just, announce the awards, and then they said they would love to also do a coffee Zoom with the nominees. So we are, in addition to getting them to film themselves announcing, actually getting to integrate a wonderful experience for the educators and the students that are participating.
That is amazing. Rachel Chafkin is probably one of the best directors that's on record right now, and she yes. intimidates the hell yep. out of me.
Yeah. Awesome. And so she is the one that said, would they be interested in a Zoom coffee? I'd be happy to do that. And I was like, yeah.
Yes, please.
So make sure I get an invitation to that, please.
Yeah. This is Lisa Shep. She,
So that's amazing. So you will be putting together, and this is because of this, you're able to have, I mean, I was honored to be asked to present one of the awards last year, but mm-hmm. this time you're able to have all these nationally known people, that, so you don't have to depend on us local folk.
Okay. You know, I love the local folks.
Of course.
Yes. This allowed us obviously to branch out a bit. Bob Mackie is announcing Best Costumes.
Oh my.
Oh my.
Oh, that is a get. Are there any other folks that you could feel comfortable talking about right now?
Yeah, sure. Laura Benanti is doing a couple of awards.
Still mad at her, but go ahead.
Oh no. We've got a lovely shout out from Stephen Schwartz. Trying to think, Adam, do you remember any more that I'm, there are several, so I feel kind of bad that I'm not.
It's Susan Stroman.
Oh, hi. The one that is, that gave, that just shot my heart. Susan Stroman and I have been texting each other through this process. She sent in a lovely video, just a very, very sweet video. So I think, yeah, I mean, I think another thing, I think hopefully will come out of this is that some of these people will be people that the students recognize, and some hopefully will be interested in learning a little bit more about these people by seeing them. I asked them all to say a little something before they do the nominations mm-hmm. about, you know, art and education, and they're all just sending in things that are like making me tear up as I watch them all.
Well, that's amazing. So the ceremony is on the 30th. How
May 31st.
May 31st. That's what I meant to say. What? How do folks find it?
Yeah. So the easiest thing I could say is to go to thelongcenter.org, or if you're more social media ish, you can just go to. You can follow us on @longcenter or @GAHSMTA, however you'd like to pronounce that.
I pronounce it Greater Austin High School Musical Theater Awards.
That's great. That's great. That was the original intent.
Yeah. So they would find it. They would find it at the Long Center website, or they could mm-hmm. find it as a, on YouTube.
It will be on YouTube, but the Long Center website will have the link to awesome. Whatever platform okay. is worked out.
So in our last few minutes. And literally we're so out of time. It's crazy, but we're having such a great conversation. We talked before we went on the air about that name, Greater Austin High School Musical Theater Awards. And you teased to me that that might be going through some changes of some sort. Do you want to talk about that at all right now?
Yeah. So last year at the awards ceremony, I mentioned that the Marianne and Andrew Heller are longtime supporters of this particular event. They have made incredible contributions that are really part of why this event can continue to happen. And so the awards are actually going to be named in their honor.
Okay.
And so we will, on May 31st, we will reveal the new logo and the official new name, and it will be much easier to say.
Yay.
And we'll, that's what's going to happen. So if you tune in on May 31st, you'll see the new look of the awards moving forward.
Well, I will definitely be there, and I'm hoping my entire audience tunes in as well, because it's really, it's important to support our young future theater artists and
absolutely. Help them along the way.
Well, thank you so much for having us.
We're very always excited. Happy to be here.
We're excited to be working on this project and to be supporting the students. I think there's going to be over 300 students actually in this in some capacity. So
that's awesome.
Pretty exciting thing to see that many kids submitting video and singing and dancing and just enjoying what they enjoy at a time like this. So
awesome. We're really excited. Wonderful. Ginger Morris and Adam Roberts, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And I know folks can find more information about this at thelongcenter.org. And I am so looking forward to the show on May 31st.
And the things I learned in high school have been there ever since.
Really love talking to Ginger. She's got such a passion for the work she does.
I swear sometimes it feels like it's the We Love Ginger show, but there is something special about her, and we are very, very lucky to have her in Austin here doing what she does.
Absolutely, and that Adam Roberts may do something as well.
I know, and then you throw the Alan Robertson in with him, and it's like, come on now.
True. So I'm really looking forward to that, but we've plumb done our show. So we've done it. We've done another week.
Another one.
Zero.
Another one bites the dust here, Lisa.
Cool. Remember, we're on the Facebook, we're on the Twitter, we're on all those things. There is no backstage because we are backstage. And I guess we'll just see you next week. We'll listen to a little bit of that Pulitzer Prize winning How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying.
Oh, excellent.
See y'all next week. Bye.
Ciao.
This is the book, Paris Original, I'm wearing tonight. I'm wearing tonight, especially for him.